With enough saran wrap, anything's possible, right?
And welcome back to another Linux Gamecast Weekly. The show covers the latest Linux gaming news, reviews, how-tos, and most importantly, whatever the hell else we come up with. I'm Old Man Vin in beautiful downtown Athens, Georgia, switching the bits, piloting this nightmare train, joined every week by the man up north, one, Jordan Spong, and staying up a little bit late. But he's alive. Yes. He's dreaming of Mustangs. Not the cars, the horses. It's kind of weird, man. Covered in ears, Mateus, we like to call him together with you. Shot Realm Dynamic helping us form. Cocaine. Voltron. There we go. I'm out of barfy DJ voice.
I thought you were going to say dreaming of mustard, because we were talking about mustard before.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? So you might go ahead and get your sticks together. We might have some fires this evening because I'm definitely playing with it. Because the first thing I have in the show notes is a very clear explanation of something is not a kludge if you can automate it, right? That's where you get to draw the line. Like if you have this Rube Goldberg amalgam Akira looking bit of technology, but the end result's functional and you can script it, not a kludge. That's a solution. You know,
you can sell it to someone.
Well, that's kind of where I'm at right now, man. I really don't want to buy a $500 motherboard.
I don't think you're alone in that one.
No, I don't think a lot of people are like, man, I can't wait. And like, I've been waiting for coming up on 2 years now for that's a Supermicro motherboard for somebody to have one on eBay used or for them to use. And like, nobody's fucking around with it. Problem with a $500 motherboard is I can buy a new AM. I can build a new AM5 system for $500. I can pay draw a check. I asked permission. I'm like, yeah, I can do
it. You asked Gemini, and Gemini yes. said it was okay.
Gimli was just like, yo, dude.
So no, nobody like, tosses $500 into an AM5.
Why are we even looking at Epic? Because they got a bunch of capture cards, got fiber cards. I have 4x16 slots. They're full. I need more. Can we find a way to reduce that? We got to get rid of the 13 HDMI cables between these three PCs. And the Threadripper. How do we do that? Well, we already have audio over IP, so we got rid of all the audio cables a long time ago using that jack. Can we do that with the video? I've messed around with that in the past, and WebRTC coming to OBS, but it's kind of slow going. But I got that kind of plugged in, playing with it, and I'm like, it's not quite there yet. It's been a minute since we visited our old friends at NewTek, NDI, and we got NDI 5. Plugged that in, got that installed, started shooting stuff back and forth. I'm like, you know what? This didn't immediately crash, so let's use it live.
Do you think this is going to end up on the NewTek website again?
Again, right?
Again.
You know, I did learn enough. I'm like, I'm going to have to make another one of these guides because this is completely different than it used to be. What we're doing, now nothing's crazy here. Okay, each of these is connected to a PC. Easy enough. They're down here. They're little butter robots. And except for Jordan's. Jordan's is like a 5600G because get Rex on.
Mine's a butterball turkey, apparently.
Right. Traditionally, Jordan's video, you know, it's connected to the PC bone, which video comes out, goes into the monitor. But before it does that, it hits an HDMI splitter. Then it takes a trip over to the Threadripper, which has a quad 4K capture card in it, which is one of those big slots. Same way with Pedro, same way with the guest box. That's not too bad. NDI just goes, boom, OBS starts up, captures the screen, sends it over the fiber. Not a problem. But I got to get video back to these guys. And that's always been the pain in the ass, even from the dark days when we were doing, like, stop motion frame.
And the audio, and we were using the Hangouts for the return.
Hangouts, like, right. I mean, it wasn't even video. It was, like, reference frames for what was going on in the show to help us keep track. Because, you know, we've always done the show, and that was like one of the things of being able to see what is taking place. You know, we're not trying to watch a Twitch stream of what was going on, you know, 10 seconds ago. No, that's the challenge, because I got to get, you know, traditionally, I just have another capture card with a video out from OBS that does a composite, sends it to another HDMI splitter, which splits that back out, which goes into all the HDMI capture cards connected to these three PCs. Like, how do we do that? So, we're using NDI on the Threadripper to send out one signal. Since these have OBS open, They're capturing that signal, and we're using the virtual webcam inside of OBS to capture that scene to generate a virtual webcam to connect to Jitsi, which goes back to them. And it hasn't exploded yet.
Yet.
I think some part of that technically constitutes misuse, but it works.
Pedro, I'm like, but it's scripted. About 90% right now. It's still technically a kludge because it will remain in kludge until I can hit the on button. And that's it, because that is the previous system of like, oh, how do you use set of, oh, I just hit the on buttons and I wait till them to start up and like we're done and everything's synced up and ready to go. We will find out. Jordan, have you taken a break from eating all of the pickle and vinegar crisps? I can't believe you don't like salt and vinegar crisps, man.
I don't. I just don't like them.
Do you not like salt? Do you not like vinegar?
I don't like vinegar.
Okay. I guess that there might be a connection there. I'm not 100%. Yeah, maybe.
It's not even that I don't like vinegar. I just don't like the specific just salt and vinegar. When there's like vinegar and other stuff, when it's like mixed in with stuff as like part of like a marinade or something, like I'm fine with that. But like vinegar on its own, not really my thing. So the moral of the story is all of Ven's chips are safe because I ain't touching that shit. They are all pickle and salt and vinegar, or salt and pickle vinegar. I don't know,
man. And I'm thinking about like a little like spray bottle to like mark things.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's just mark your territory with vinegar.
It's not deer piss. It's just vinegar.
Yeah.
Down in the lab trying to engineer like salt and vinegar pizza. I'm like, this will get them.
No, like you literally just coat your house in vinegar, except for like a little circle that I am restricted to, like a fucking demon.
Dude, yeah. Yeah, it's like the fucking line in the door. I'm like,
damn it, let me in.
No. No, really. What's been going on, man?
Oh, honestly, not much. It's just been a week of a lot of meetings. I think I'm finally getting over the myriad of shit that's wrong with my body.
That's nice.
Yeah, things are clear. I can breathe. I can kind of sleep again. It's good.
I hope you have a nice little respite before you reach the age where shit just starts hurting for no reason.
Oh, things already hurt for no reason. Well, things hurt for a reason. It's because I stick dumb weights on
my head. Yeah, I see. That's amateur shit. The advanced mode. Because, like, right now, I was talking about that on Friday when we were doing Trackmania. Come play Trackmania with us if you want. We'll be back on Tuesday. My shoulder hurt. Then you go, 2 days ago, like, right. I deserve that. Versus getting up halfway through, my shoulder hurts. What happened? Nothing. It just fucking hurts now. No reason. You didn't do it. Not your fault. There's no bruise. There's no, like, ding in the wall or anything. Just good old-fashioned...
That cartilage just isn't there anymore.
It just starts sucking like that. Something to look forward to for you.
Yes. But hey, that's what the lifting pauses to fix.
There you go.
It makes that go slower. So I'll delay the random pains until I'm much, much older.
Pedro Mateus wants a motoring vehicle the size of a cyber truck.
And and nearly as safe.
Yeah.
That's the thing. I really don't want a Cybertruck. It looks neat as a concept, but I really don't want one. A Shelby GT500 KR, on the other hand, I'd be down for one of them.
When you look at a Cybertruck and go like, that doesn't scream douche hard enough.
It needs to turn into a giant robot. Like, why can't Elon do this? Why can't I plug it into my brain and turn it to Optimus Prime?
There are, you know, there are those cars that you look at them. It's like, okay, so you're not comfortable with the size of your penis. You look at a Cybertruck and you go, you're not comfortable with the shape of your penis. Okay. All right.
I look at a Cybertruck and I'm like, how did you escape the PlayStation 1?
Maybe they're just like, you know, retro gaming enthusiasts. And they're like, always wanted to drive a Pixel or a Polygon.
Don't know. I know this is. I very much like.
I'm going to go on record as like that original prototype Cybertruck looked a fuckload more doper than the production model.
All of the concepts seems to look better. There was a Peugeot a few years ago that was really, really nice. Like the concept was a legitimately good looking car, and then the actual release version, which is the electrical ones that they have nowadays, they look like butt.
Do you think there would be a market for like the Persephone for like the Homer car these days?
No.
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 Not air soundproof chamber for your children with like a built-in TV.
Just for like maybe the Simpsons fans.
What are you talking about?
with enough saran wrap, anything's possible, right?
We're not putting the horse in saran wrap.
Oh shit. Well then I gotta remove a bunch of the plastic wrap, maybe stick it in the microwave, poke some holes in it with a fork. It's the Steam So it's been a slow news week at spacebar.news. And so we have to talk about the incoming time bomb. You know, Alfred Hitchcock once said that if you stick steam underneath a table and make it explode, people will still write articles about how awful steam is. So yeah, this is talking about the theoretical inshittification, the concept that like services are now just making themselves worse because they have captured all possible users, and the only way to grow is to extract more value out of both their users and their suppliers as they've implemented a middleman. There's actually Yanis Varoufakis wrote a really interesting book about that I would recommend you, and he would know about it. But
now anyways, from the distance,
I know human babies. He eats human babies, and his wife is smoking hot. They're talking about how Steam is sort of has become the de facto default place for PC gaming. The Epic Game Store trying to supplant it by giving out free games. And no one has really been able to make a dent in this. And there's one of the points they bring up is like, well, other platforms are suffering, like Apple, the Steam experience on Apple. Is not very good. And I quote, Valve isn't obligated to continue supporting all of its games and software features on Mac, especially when Apple's reluctance to natively support Vulkan and other cross-platforms technologies makes game development more complex. There's no excuse for Steam on Mac to be far worse experience than on other platforms, though.
I can think of a couple.
No, cognitive dissonance is a real bitch on that one because, the excuse. You just fucking said what the excuse is.
Someone did not read this article before posting it.
This is a reflex reaction if you bought a Mac.
Right. But here's the thing. Him ringing warning bells about this isn't necessarily a bad thing. But Valve is not your typical VC-backed tech company that needs to be profitable all of a sudden because interest rates are not 0% anymore and money isn't free. Having all our eggs in one basket with Valve and PC gaming is probably not a good idea in the long run. Unfortunately, no one has really come up with a suitable competitor for this. The Epic Game Store is—they bring this up—is just a shit experience overall. Even like I get free games from Epic, and that's literally the only reason why I use it. The games aren't necessarily cheaper on there. The shopping experience is worse. The discoverability is basically whatever Epic decides is free this month is the thing that gets promoted. Yeah,
I mean, yeah, like this is the whole thing, man. Like Valve sucks less than its competitors. Like that—that's it. That's all it has to do, which is. Just strangely, it's gotten easier and easier and easier as this inshittification continues on. And, you know, that's not a ticking time bomb. Like, that has been a proven business strategy for them. Like, so we just sit and not do anything, huh? Valve time it?
You just don't actively dick people around. EA, Ubisoft, Epic, so on and so forth. And people, turns out, they're okay with your platform. And
like, oh, so you got to be extra nice and sweet. No. You just don't, wait.
Yeah,
so
just
you
don't dick with people.
Actively try to dick over our customers. Maybe just like, no. Just, and come on, just a little dicking. Like, no.
And the reality of it is Valve has been shown to be pretty willing to engage with the developers that work with them. They're willing to work with open source communities to get things working and to make things available for people in a broader sense. Helping out other companies like Codeweavers in the process, right? Like Codeweavers has a bunch of money coming into them because now companies are paying them, like Square is paying them to QA games on Proton. They're very much doing it in a sense where a rising tide lifts all boats. So could there be a heel turn? Probably. Once Gabe gets the space worms, I'm pretty sure then Valve is going to turn evil and we're going to need to start worrying about it. But let's see some actual
today
competition
is not
first.
That day.
No. The article seems to cut off at the point where you'd expect the evidence of the full inshittification of Steam will commence. Like, okay, you're getting to it, so no, the article just ends there.
Fuck maybe, you, Pedro Mateus. Exhibit A. There's no Steam Controller 2.
Well, there isn't. But people really, really like the layout on the Steam Deck, so maybe. Maybe Valve could, you know, shrink that down to size.
No, nope. Never gonna happen. Because Steam Deck controller enthusiast, 12 of us, which I'm not, I don't even consider myself one of them.
Appreciator.
Appreciator. Not, connoisseur is probably too strong a word, isn't it?
Yeah.
Owners. How about owners? Steam controller owners.
Possessor, yes.
Yeah. Get off our lawns.
They're here.
This comes from Dextero.com. And like, there's really not much to this. I mean, a couple of people are like, yeah, we love these. They're interesting. And they were. Mm-hmm. They were. And 2 weeks ago, Jordan and I had a very interesting experience where we, in the aftershowsen, we effectively sat down and forced ourselves. We got our Steam controllers, hooked them up. And we played through some Quake 2 co-op.
And it was pretty fun.
At first, it was a damn nightmare. We were just talking mad shit the entire time until, like, maybe the halfway, three-quarters point, and we both at roughly the same time were like, yeah, we're kind of feeling like it. It wasn't a great experience in the sense, like, yeah, you'd probably rather be playing with a keyboard and treble, but I'm like, this is workable. Like,
yeah, it is completely passable. Like, yeah, I wouldn't want to like PvP against someone on a keyboard and mouse, but like,
right.
If I wanted to sit back in my living room and play Quake 2, I could do that reasonably well and like, have a solid experience doing it.
Pedro, do you think if we ever get one like that, because like, the Steam controller to me always felt like it was just missing something.
It was missing the right analog stick, and
it was missing a D-pad.
The dedicated D-pad, yes, for like the
that's got D-pad 2D lines on it. Shut up.
Yes.
Yeah. Sure.
But yeah, no, the right analog stick was the one that most people genuinely and rightfully complained about the lack thereof. And the Steam Deck kind of proves that if you have a dedicated D-pad and if you have a dedicated right analog stick along with everything else and the two areolas and all the buttons and the two little back buttons, you have a damn good controller. The author of the article says it's like,
too.
Yes, like the gyro is very much a big selling point of both the Steam controller and the Steam Deck. And maybe you'd like to build your own controller with a really, really precise gyro implementation. Inputlabs.io. It's legitimately the Steam Deck.
Hold that up. Somebody's like, he's going to send it back one day, though.
Every time he holds it up, they send him like a nickel over PayPal.
If they ask for it back, I will send it back. Until they do, I'm not gonna.
They're like, you've touched that too much.
Yeah, I completely understand that mentality, because like I'm in this YouTuber like creator Discord that like I have no business being on with these people, but they invited me to like settle a Linux debate, and I think I was supposed to leave. And I'm like, I'm not going anywhere. This is fun to watch you. Yeah,
you got Dracula'd, man. You invited me in. No, I'm not leaving.
I don't participate. I keep my mouth shut, and I learn and read because them and their employees have their chats about the algorithm shit. I'm like, I can learn stuff in here. But yeah, I feel you on that, Pedro.
It is.
You got to say something. I'm not doing shit. I'm just being myself right now.
The Alpaca is a genuinely nice controller, and the fact that you can just download everything that you need to build yourself your own is awesome. But if Valve, and I think they have the technical chops to do this, just scooch everything a little bit closer, keep the layout as it is on the Steam Deck, just make it a little smaller.
It's a little sandwich,
Yeah. And
six layers of AA batteries.
You will have a very successful controller at that point.
There's a couple of things I need to do. Here's probably what's going to end up happening. Valve. The Steam Deck 2 is going to have Steam Chucks.
Steam Chaku?
Steam Chucks.
Like the
I want them to rebel
in Switch style.
Just to fuck with Nintendo. Valve's that type of company.
No. They need to like fit it on some kind of polearm, like a halberd or like a glaive or something.
I want the Steam Chucks because I still want that controller we were promised 10 years ago.
That one that splits in two. Yeah.
Yeah.
That you could use like half with a keyboard and mouse or whatever. Yeah. That man, I wish that was a cool idea. I wish they didn't steal everyone's money.
That was a cool idea. But the more I think about like the Steam controllers, they took a shot with it. I don't see Valve necessarily ever going back to revisit that unless they do a Steam machine, then that makes sense. But
well, there were people in like this in our Steam controller and like our Steam Deck talking about how it's kind of they use the Steam Deck not with the dock anymore because they like the controller on the Steam Deck better. Mm-hmm. And they would like to use it in docked mode, but you got to use like your hot pink DualShock 5 or whatever, right? Like,
and I don't think they can ever really recreate the Steam controller itself as it because of
no, Aiden's, they got sued right? for yeah. that.
Yeah,
yeah. Oh,
but if they just make like the Steam Witch, if they just like combine the two ends of the Steam Deck,
I think that would very much work. And since they're buttons, the two back buttons or four back buttons, as the case may be, not paddles. Then that doesn't fall into the patent of that company that is owned by Corsair.
Need Pedro, how dare you? I need the paddles that are really cool to have, but I'd never use them.
Yes. To be fair, though, like the on the Steam Deck, the way that you hold it, if you have like, you know, fingers here, mm-hmm. these fingers just rest directly on the buttons. Like the design, the ergonomics for the Steam Deck are just perfect in that respect. So yeah, just make it smaller. Scooch everything a little closer.
No, what we need is also like a VR display that you can put on your head that connects to it wirelessly. Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got a couple of new games for you this week. Starting out with, this is like Manos Hardcore, right? Pump Action Manos?
Yes. this doesn't completely eschew the cards. They're still there if you care to engage with the mechanics of Buckshot Roulette to that point. But yeah, the thing here is you're playing Russian Roulette with shotgun, 12 gauge shotgun. And yeah, the first time I saw this was Nori was watching a Markiplier video and he was playing it and I'm like, that looks a lot like Inscription. It's made by a different person, but it's got the exact same vibe. And yeah, it is basically you have
Coney 2012.
You have the like the shotgun, and some of the shells are actual shells. The other ones are blanks, and you have like attachments and other items that you can use in order to
manipulate the odds and stuff. Yeah.
Basically shift the thing in your favor. Or yeah, just play the game as it comes. And now there's the double or nothing mode. And it's now available on Steam because this game has been out for a while. It's just only come out on Steam on the 4th, but it was available on itch before then. And it's pretty cheap. It's currently a part of the Lovecraftian Days bundle. So if you want to pick it up, now's the time.
Yeah, they got that Linux native build, which means you can get your Russian Roulette on the go on the deck. Mm-hmm. And multiplayer is coming soon. That would be fun for multiplayer, right? Like it's a bluffing game with you and your friends. Yeah, I'm down. That would be weird in VR though. Like a VR Russian Roulette game.
I don't know, man. Like I just saw some buzz about it. And I'm like, let me just at least go watch a video because I was just curious. You know, I was like, Buckshots of Fate. This is gonna be some furry top down JRPG pixel. Like, nope. Missed that one. And lo and behold, even it had a Linux build, so yeah, and it's super cheap. If that's you know, if you've been dying to play some, and I think this is more about like the metagame mechanics inside of everything else than like just what it says on the tin. Oh yeah, there we go, job done. Oh wait, hang on, there's more.
Yeah, we got to talk about Savior lists, because you know, if you can't get a copy of the Savior Gang anymore to look at old beardless Jordan, you can go play this game, which has little girl Jordan. I don't know. This is a cool little it has a really cool art style, but it is a 2D action platformer where you gotta become the savior, and you can take on a couple different forms in order to one where you have to like fight people, one where you have to run away. And yeah, Van, you brought up in the show notes, it does give me like another world or that kind of game vibe.
Mm-hmm.
There was that other one too on PlayStation that I'm completely spacing on that was like clay animated or something. It was very, very similar
to another one. Was it like a big muscly deer? What the fuck?
Yeah. What is that? Like, is the enemy here like Cerberus the Aardvark or something? That's what he looks like to me.
Like dude does not miss gym day, whatever's going on there, man. Yeah, I saw it, and yeah, 100% another world vibes from that. However, that being said, long as it doesn't control like another world.
Right. Yes.
Those fuck mothering leeches.
And then, like, yes, 5 minutes later, the animation happens.
Like, you know, they're having to jump over those doom space leeches. Like that. That is where like 99% of the people quit playing the game right there.
Yeah, no, it is. It looks okay, but I'm still not over platformers. If it's just a platformer, no.
That guy looks happy. he's very smiley.
Bunch of smiles. I mean,
so are these guys. They're still happy.
Yeah, like if you squint, that's just fucking blasphemous, Pedro.
Yeah, blasphemous had a bit more of the action. That was a bit more of the focus, was the action and the exploration. Here, it's very clearly about the platforming.
I mean, Blasphemous was like slow and boring, though.
Kind of like me.
Don't insult boring like that.
Let's talk about horse punching. Oh my gosh.
Yes, it's fighting games on Linux. Yeah, we don't get many of them.
I missed that, but she said, Chuck, my bad. My apologies, everyone watching.
Right. Them's fighting herds. And if you follow the fighting game scene as much as some people who leave YouTube comments on our videos, you probably know that them's
the
fighting herds
is about?
A bit of a rough history. There, we got a comment, I don't know if it was last week or the week before.
A couple people think I have very bad opinions on Skullgirls. I don't know
yes,
what they are, though.
Specifically about Skullgirls, like yeah, because apparently Skullgirls made the main stage at EVO, but them's fighting herds never will. And now we know why, apparently. Because, yeah.
That's the last version, isn't it?
Yeah, this seems to be the last update. It's revision 2 of patch 600. And they have some changes and they have some balance issues. But what they don't have is the rest of the story mode. And if you go look at the Steam reviews, people are painting a fairly grim picture. Apparently,
I mean, not a lot.
Yeah. 28% of the 35
reviews. I mean, now admittedly, it's 35 negative reviews, which is 100% of the player base. But
pretty much. And yeah, no, apparently the games industry happened and the publisher laid off a bunch of the original developers. So people are not pleased that the story mode is effectively incomplete and will never get any further development. And as far as we can tell, this is the last update that the game's going to get. So yeah, people are pissed and rightfully so.
I was going to say, did they ever fix like the oversensitive movement in the Linux builds?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, probably not.
Probably
this,
not.
like some of the disconnect, though. I mean, it's a fighting game story mode. Yeah, why weren't you upset in like 2021, a year after this game came out, and that wasn't done yet?
They had chapter one, and people are saying, we're going to get more as time goes on.
What about 2022? Then brace yourself, 2023.
I guess. Listen, they are being patient, and now they find out that nothing will ever come.
You
got to
roll
hope
back and go, the fuck were y'all doing?
Yeah,
they were playing the first chapter of the story mode over and over and over again, scanning it for every minor detail and constructing elaborate fans theories. Obviously,
That sucks, but I mean, online still works. So, I mean, you got it. And it's a 4-year-old game. And be glad something like that ever got made, you know, because it just started out as a fever dream. And it was
a fan game. Yeah. That got turned into like an actual
Lab Zero
thing.
Gave them the engine to play around with. Like, they did all right. You got your $20 worth, you 35 people that are foaming mad.
That's the
something,
thing.
Something
it had
mad cow disease.
It had the furry appeal. It's like, ooh, it's the furry fighting game. Fair enough. And unfortunately, it seems like it's just not going to survive if those reviews are anything to go by.
Well, I mean, I just like pick and choose your fucking battles. Like, I mean, again, I'm glad it was a joke fucking fighting game. Like, it got way too serious. And like, yeah, it's legitimate. I'm not saying it's a legitimate fighting game now, Vin. I'm like, I understand that. But I'm talking about the fucking horn. Be glad it got as much traction as it did. You know, it's My Little Pony's friendship is kick-ass. Have fun with it. It's unfortunate. That sucks. And it happens to games. Now, who remembers Vocaloid shit?
I'm still vaguely unclear on Vocaloid shit, honestly.
Well, you thought Bad Apple was Vocaloid.
I thought it. That was what it was told to me originally. So I don't know.
I don't blame you. I didn't know that there was a. If you don't know, look up Bad Apple. If you've never heard it, make sure you listen through it all the way through and thank me in like 2 months when you're still humming it. Now, yeah, right, exactly. And you hear it and you would think Vocaloid, like, oh, that's digital. Then there's like a live performance. I'm like, oh, what type of, mm-hmm. like, oh, no, that's just a lady singing that. Oh, yeah. Well played.
Shmups, Japanese shmups. Look up Doho if you don't know what that is.
Look up what it's based on and go, that's not the same song. Why did somebody want them to be related?
Yes.
Because those two songs have nothing to do with each other.
But related to this, Crypt of the Necrodancer.
Yeah, a Vocaloid of the Necrodancer, specifically, because we're getting Hatsune Miku. Yes, that Hatsune Miku, and don't worry, there's enough weebs on our Discord that I don't feel lonely in being the one person who knows about Hatsune Miku.
I knew it started with an H.
Yeah, I am aware of what Hatsune Miku is. Damned if I have ever heard a Hatsune Miku song, quote unquote song, I guess. But yeah,
they are songs.
They brought this into Crypt of the Necrodancer. They have some Hatsune Miku tracks and two new ones from the main composer of the game who used the Vocaloid to make some new songs. And yeah, you get some musical themed abilities.
That's a bunch of tracks, man.
Yeah, and the Danny Baranowski ones are the two original ones. So, yeah. That's pretty neat. It might bring in some weebs who are on the fence about Crypt of the Necrodancer, or some diehard Hatsune Miku fans who are like, oh my god, I need to own everything she's in!
There is quite a following of Vocaloids and Hatsune Miku in particular, though they do say that it's like, oh, she's bringing her spring onion to battle. It's like, okay. A, it was a leak.
Nasty.
And originally, it was Inoue Horihime's shtick from Bleach. That one scene from Bleach that got taken way out of context.
I thought it was Farfetch'd from Pokemon.
He also had a leak, yes.
Sure.
Though he didn't spin it around.
Yes, he does. In the fucking anime, he spins it around.
Oh my god, nerd fight.
In the anime. Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, one last update. You might have kept in mind that April 1st rolled around. We had some good April Fool's things going down this. Did you guys see anything that was particularly interesting on Monday?
Oh, I don't remember, honestly. It's kind of a
My face in the mirror?
Has the inner thing... Do we have anything in our memory? What was it? Cyberpunk and floppies?
Oh yeah, that there was that. I do remember that one.
CD Projekt Red, y'all need to be careful with that type of shit because there's some motherfuckers out there going, "I would buy that."
Yeah, it takes what a was month it, straight 90, of floppy swapping something to install. Yeah,
and nobody wants it on your cheap ass floppies. They want it on reel to reel tape archive.
No, I want it on those 5 1/4 inch like floppies, man.
All right. And one of the gaming chair companies like came up with a stupid chair that I thought was pretty good. It was like,
completely
circled you and had grips for everything.
Yeah,
nothing too wild. Let us know in the comments if you saw anything that was tech related that you enjoyed that we're completely spacing out on because of the way the internet time works. That was Monday. Like, what was that Monday?
Right? Nothing happened.
One thing did happen though. A little game called Silk Song.
Silky Slims.
Yeah, there was an announcement. You know, I saw it on Reddit first, and later I saw it on Twitter. On April 1st, it got a store page on the Xbox Market, which I didn't even click on because go to hell.
Something Australia.
I don't even need to deal with this stuff, man. And an ESRB rating. And I'm like, I didn't read any of this. I ignored this. And I didn't come back to this until like Thursday, maybe Wednesday. And I'm like, oh, that was real? So, okay. Team Cherry, well fucking played. They got that out. Also, Dex, don't toy with my emotion like this. This just brings up a question for me. You know, it's not an April Fool's joke. We have no further information. Somebody from the Xbox team, you know, like, hey, is this for real? And they're like, stay tuned for more. And I'm like, I've been doing that for 6 years. Dex, Here's my thoughts on this, though. Silk Song. Let's just apply this to a bunch of games, because we're getting old, and we can definitely look at a different couple of different titles. Very interesting question, at least I think so. How long? Because Silk Song has been in development. You know, this was like supposed to be DLC for Hollow Knight. Years went by, and we're going to make it its own game. Everybody's being patient. But how long can a game be in development before the DNF E3 effect, which is your Duke Nukem Forever Part 3, kicks right in? And we're talking about that point that will happen. You know, I'm sure there's tons of other games that other people know about that I don't know, that are just in development for so long that there's it's a zero win situation. You cannot live up to the hype or just the expectations people are going to have for the game when it releases. Like, you know, you got a ticking time bomb in your hand right there. Like, you can never release Half-Life 3, gentlemen.
So I think Half-Life 3 is definitely probably a better example than, say, Duke Nukem Forever. Because you got to remember, the other thing about Duke Nukem Forever is that that game was shit. They tried making that game like four or five times.
They kept changing engines.
And this was the end result. So when you compare it to something like Hollow Knight Silk Song, that maybe is going through a similar phase, maybe there's something to it. But also, like, quality games require work. And sometimes you need to take the time to create a polished experience. I don't know if this is what the Hollow Knight people are doing.
Well, I mean, here's the thing. That's that last part. Sometimes just the gaming.
Well, so Half-Life 2 had like a very long wait in between Half-Life 1, and that was well received. Alex was very well received. It was not Half-Life 3, but people really liked it for what it was.
People with VR headsets.
Yeah, but it was
all
good.
Three people with VR headsets who could play it properly and really enjoyed it. Yes.
Yeah. So like I don't know. I think this is like one of these things that we retroactively apply after it's done. Because like, what, we have games that you can buy right now that are still in development that people are playing. Look at
early,
like,
access has changed things up a little bit.
Yeah. Star Citizen.
Then we look at games that are just not in early access that you're just waiting. Because what I'm saying is 100% true, because we witnessed it. Like, I just brought up the two examples that came at the top of my head that have come out, and this will happen. It's just natural. But like, if you stay in development long enough, the game market itself can shift. The interest in the game that you were working on 6 years ago can be like, eh. And I can speak from my personal experience for waiting on a game. Waiting on Silk Song, I'm not at the, like, it'll never live up to the hype point, like, whatever. I'm not that person anyway. But I can see the tip of the hill of, like, yeah, whatever. Like, that's where I am personally as a human being, individual, one person here on a podcast right now.
I guess the other thing too is, like, the first Hollow Knight is a huge game. So if you're going to be like releasing a follow up to that, you think people are going to like expect something of the same size or bigger, right?
Silk Song is like a billion times better. But okay, here's another factor: scope creep.
Yeah, I mean, that can certainly fall in there. You can't really avoid that.
Especially if you set a deadline and stick to that shit. Game,
yeah, unless you have a producer that's writing your ass to stick to the deadline. But yeah, I think scope creep and feature creep in general is kind of inevitable, especially if you have something as popular and as well loved as Hollow Knight. Because yes, you want to make it better. And I think that somewhat justifies, okay, it's been 6 years. That's cool. I think 6 years is fair if you want, especially for a small team, to improve on something that was already very, very good. I think it's fair.
Ladies and gentlemen, pixelated pigs with a side of crab.
Breath of the Minecraft, baby. They have a new release out, Velorin. I would say these days Valorant is probably the prettiest open source game out there. Like, look at that shit. Like, this is boxes, and in the distance that looks gorgeous. But they have a new version out. It's not 16. It comes with a bunch of updates. There are some new biomes, Mesa biomes, not Mesa drivers. I feel I have to clarify on the Linux podcast. And also, servers can now share plugins with clients when they're joining a server, which is probably pretty convenient if you're joining a server that has a bunch of mods, but also hopefully no one does anything naughty. Also, OpenGL support. And how they got through that was pretty neat because they're doing it through WebGPU. We talked about WebGPU as like potentially a way to target graphics cards without having to necessarily worry about platform. And Velorin's been doing this to a pretty successful degree. So that's pretty neat.
I just like zooming out all the way. Yes. Now we got airships and a bunch of other shit, man. So yeah, what game isn't better when you update your hack skill tree? I mean, come on. Like, that's just a love letter to me. I'm like, yeah, you need a skill tree for your axes? Like, sure, let's go. It's pixelated. And now available in Esperanto. Oh.
Oh, man, this shit got me speaking Esperanto.
Mother, that's all you had to say. Pretty cool game, man. Like, every time we talk about this game and it gets an update, I'm like, I'm going to, because I played it once for just a few minutes just to test it. And we need to, like, sit down and, like, create some characters so that we can, like, jump into a server at one time in an after shows and eventually one day before the death of the universe. Something you can't pay to win is a game after it's been taken offline and people are mad about it. Or a person's upset about it. You know what? I'm a huge fan of something I've been trying to preach for the past couple of years. Be the fucking change.
Yes. And if there was ever a time to take action about companies, especially big publishers, taking games offline and effectively removing your ability to play the game that you paid for, well, now it's that time. This is an effort started by Ross Scott, the voice behind Freeman's Mind.
Don't you mean the mind behind Freeman?
Yes. Effectively, the mind behind the voice behind Freeman's Mind. He basically saw this opportunity because at one point, Ubisoft, in their hubris, decided to... decided to brag that... the crew, the first one, had 12 million people playing the game. And then, at the end of March this year, 2024, they took the servers for the crew offline, which means those 12 million people can no longer play the game. So in the US, there's basically very little that people can do because they buried in the terms of service that they can effectively take your purchase away from you because... Yeah. Thing is, video games aren't just sold in the US, and Ubisoft is technically based in France. So there's a very, very big push to make, basically, just take, if you own the crew at any point, just take as many of the actions as you can. It's all, the website is stopkillinggames.com. There's a list of what you can do. Basically, it's already, you know, laid out by territory. Just pick the one that you would fit into. Go through everything. Do as much as you can, because this is one of the best choices and chances at this point to hopefully get companies to stop killing games. And this isn't... Like, a lot of people are saying, oh, it's their companies, they shouldn't be expected to lose money by keeping a server online for forever, effectively. This isn't about that. This is about allowing people to continue to play the game without having a server running. If you can't do that right now, release a patch in the future that enables the game to be played completely offline whenever people want to. Or, even better, start developing games that don't require a server that's on the whole time. I did a quick lookup of just MMOs that were shut down on Wikipedia. There's 222 that have just been disappeared because the servers are gone. You can no longer play them. I found the most complete list that I could find of community projects in efforts to...
Pull one out for Club Penguin.
Yeah, to keep those games alive. There are 62, as far as the MMO Folklorist website could find, there are 62 community projects for those 222 games, which means 160 MMOs that you can no longer play at all because of corporate negligence.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm reminded of like how some fashion companies will destroy their stock rather than have excess to maintain scarcity and maintain their stranglehold on supply, or grocery stores for that matter. But yeah, Ross is recommending that at least if you own a copy of The Crew, you have to, if you want to file a complaint with the DGCCRF, which is the French Consumer Protection Agency, you have to first contact Ubisoft and provide proof that you did. I checked the Canadian petition because I'll be like, yeah, you know, I'll sign it. It is not up on their site yet. And oh God, that Canadian petition website is fucking awful. I highly recommend Ross, once that petition comes up, include the direct link to it, because that site is just complete poo-poo navigation. But it's a valid point. And as we're going to be talking about this more in the next story, but as more and more games are using server-side components, this will become more and more of a problem going forward, especially as games fail to find their markets and their publishers will want to shut them down because they don't want recurrent spend. One thing that Ross brings up in the video that is kind of like their soft negotiation point is they're actually okay with having companies like actually release the source code to server components so that someone could theoretically reverse engineer the server. But as Ross brings up, there's also some, you could abuse the fuck out of this if you were so inclined. So this is not actually within the petition itself. They have. So yeah. I'm all for this, and I think this is really gonna do it, and I really wish that, or I really hope that they can get some motion, especially if the French Consumer Protection Agency starts putting their boot down on Ubi's balls. That'd be nice.
We've talked about it time and time again on this show. You know, we've definitely spent time between breaks and the after shows and the pre-shows and just kind of spitballing. We're like, well, what would be a good solution, a compromise, or just a way to prevent this from happening? Now, out of the three of us, how many of us own this game? What the fuck's wrong with you?
Admittedly, it came free with the 970.
All right. Okay. That, without the difficult multipliers, I got it. How many of us have bought a game, currently have a game? Let's just say currently have a game in your Steam library that if it goes offline, that's it. That's dead.
Probably
I have several MMOs in my Steam library
that are not several. MMOs. I'm sorry. I can't back you up with the MMOs, man. I'm like, you knew what the fuck you signed up for there, man.
I don't agree
with it. No, I'm not defending it. I'm just saying like there's like, I'm trying to think of like a game, like, you know, a first person game that would otherwise just be like, yeah, that
actually the, if you like Diablo, If you're a Diablo fan, you have
Diablo 4 is one of them. Yeah,
The SimCity, they had that SimCity that had like online, always online DRM. They did patch that out because someone found out that you could just turn that off from an INI file.
Yeah,
yes. They're like, fine, we'll do it. But Ross brings up live services where you can buy a lot of like stuff in there, and then what if that game ever shuts down? Your microtransactions are gone. And you know, you can say like, yeah, don't buy stuff for microtransactions, but like
only person I can speak for is myself, is that solution of like, I don't think I would ever buy a game that was online only. That, because I'm kind of picking about, you know, you're talking about somebody who runs a Track Media server, you know, hosts himself. And that's one of the reasons for the longevity of that game. I'm seriously trying to like think, because there has to be a game that I purchased that I just cannot play anymore because you couldn't run a local server. That's my little bit of advice. Is that too much to ask? Like the research, have we as gamers fallen to the point where we can't?
Well, to Ross's point, a lot of games don't even advertise this, so you have to go out of your way to research this.
Yes,
which is
that's going, you know, to Google. It's still, I mean, it's my money.
Do your own caveat emptor.
If they said, hey man, no, don't worry about it, you can download the server, right? Because it's usually like, can I get a dedicated server, is this gonna die? And they're like, no, dude, don't worry about it, we got it. Like in this case where they're like, it'll never go offline, don't worry about it, and like you said that, you got a case. I'm just thinking about me personally, like How much research? How much fluff do we, are we going to like? No. The average person, us, yes, of course, we would be able to figure that out. But the average person, they would be drooling on their keyboard too hard to be able to figure it out. Well,
the average person isn't going to care, right? Until they get the rug pulled out from under them. And that's the point. The average
person's not going to give a shit, period. They're just going to keep rolling. They're playing mobile games, baby.
They're going to say, no, that sucks, and go to a different game. But that's a shitty environment to exist in, and we probably shouldn't let companies get away with that kind of behavior. Hence, this thing.
What we're going to end up with is more of a push and incentivize companies to move to cloud and streaming, where they don't have to worry about this.
They'll have to worry about people complaining that the games are worse. But then again, we've seen the just how bad games have gotten lately, and you have both Microsoft and Ubisoft claiming that their more recent games are quadruple A, whatever the fuck that means.
It means it's got 4 A's.
I would like to see this extend to cloud gaming, either like to allow some form of retribution or recompense when you shut down a game or a service, right? Like,
so what do we think about getting games on Steam? Because I've had this conversation with we're talking about that. How many times have you like, why don't buy games on Steam? Yeah, I will buy them on GOG, and I'm like, well, you don't buy games on Steam in the first place. You don't own any of those fucking games. You got a license to fucking play the game. That's all you got.
Yeah, that's a rotten situation to begin with. If I had my way, that kind of shit wouldn't exist at all. So.
Valve have specifically said themselves that they don't force Steam as a DRM on anyone. Mm-hmm. People can use Steam as a way to, make sure that your purchase is tied to that particular license for that particular game. But there are just as many, if not more, DRM-free games on Steam than there are on GOG, just because there are so many more games on Steam than there are on GOG. And you can just release a game on Steam without any DRM. It's just a delivery method.
And honestly, like the barrier that Ross is proposing is pretty low. The game just has to be functional. They could basically pull a Rocket League and shut off all the online services. As long as you can play single player, you're good. That's what this boils down to.
And now they bring up Rocket League. I mean, I guess that technically counts, because if they shut down Rocket League, you can't run a dedicated server with Rocket League.
No, you cannot. Mm-hmm. You're stuck.
You can only play against multiplayer, bots, and that's it.
Yeah.
No, you can use Steam Remote Play. Yeah. That's a valid solution.
Oh, man. Now, you got to think about, like, the innovation that this fucked up situation has generated over the years. What's the online that they use for the fighting games?
Rollback?
No. The games that don't have online multiplayer anymore. The servers are gone, and it simulates. It's kind of like remote play. It's got a name. It's a piece of software that I've seen Maximilian do it, use with Kenny and the other guys. It's, like, low latency. Somebody will like throw it in a minute.
Not like Hamachi or something. Or,
sounds
or
like Hamachi or something like that.
It's like a VPN or something. Okay. To do LAN games over the internet.
Exactly. Or like local, where you can give somebody, your control player two effectively, right?
Yeah.
Pretty cool stuff. Go sign it. If you're in a country and you got the game, don't do it if you don't have the game. No, because that's going to look
this
bad.
Is very much if you have the game, because this is trying to set up a legal precedent in as many countries as possible.
And it's Ubisoft, so nobody's really got a soft spot for...
Yeah, fuck them. Fuck them in the ear.
If you got Scroobied, man, go... don't get Scroobied. There we go.
If you get Scroobied, take it out on Ubi.
There you go.
With that Crewby. A
little bit of data mining right here. Towards the end of the gaming report of... The 2024. It seemed like just yesterday it was 2024, Jordan.
I know, but now it's 2026. How time flies. Yeah, this is the console gaming report from Newzoo. If you wanted to, you could have them email the slide deck to you, or there's a slide share where you can just scroll through it like I did. And yeah, there is, this is basically a bunch of number crunching by a bunch of business wonks to say, what's the deal with gaming and PC and console gaming and the growth and some of the trends going on. There's a lot of information about how there's 43 games that are comprising of like 90% of total play time of the past year. A bunch of
every time I say Newzoo, I think Mikazoo.
Yeah. What, 60% of playtime in 2023 went to 6-year-old games. Ben wants to talk about that. A lot of that had to do with live service games and like stuff like GTA 5, Fortnite, to a lesser extent, PlayerUnknown Battlegrounds, to a greater extent, Roblox. Mm-hmm. Where these are like 6-year-old games that people are spending time with. And they're saying that, you know, as the live services become more and more prevalent, and as they become more and more embedded in the game, in gaming industry, all games are going to have to compete against Roblox and Fortnite in terms of marketing space. They talked a lot about how the almost over 50% of the revenue from games came from premium content. So that's like the deluxe editions of games with like all the extra crap. DLC still made up 30% of the that purchase. So we're seeing a lot of like external monetization as opposed to like the actual pricing of games. But games have also sort of stayed solid, consistent in terms of their actual monetary price. They talk about the effect of cross media platform or cross media support, bringing up stuff like the Mario movie and Last of Us. About how, like, if you have a clear vision of what your multimedia campaign is going to look like, you can use that to draw more people into your existing games. They're also talking. They also mentioned that overall game growth is going to be slowing over the next couple of years, and more. And I think that's going to mean that there's going to be more of an emphasis on like premium and DLC and extra stuff to extract more money out of the existing games than just selling new stuff. Also,
I do like the breakdown of, they do it right at the start too, which is the, okay, here's the PC players, here's the console players. PC players, about 56% of the games are premium games, like the ones you pay up front. Then you have like 30% is from microtransactions and 12% is from DLC, and the rest of it is effectively subscriptions. And then you have the console players, which they have 57% of premium games. So they pay, console players more likely to pay for the game itself up front. But PC players have the advantage on both DLC and subscription. So how does that work? I mean, I can see why, because it's much easier to type in your credit card and everything else to just make more purchases on PC without having to do it via a controller. But you'd think with the console market being as big as it is that people would invest more on DLC specifically, maybe not subscriptions.
I don't know, man. Like I don't buy much in the way of DLC. Like usually I will buy a DLC if I really liked your game. And a lot of times it's just me saying thank you and I never touch it.
You're in the minority of PC people, apparently.
What really tickled my pickle was 60% of playtime in 2023, ladies and gentlemen, went to 6-year-old games. Huh.
Fortnite.
So yeah, I'm not Fortnite alone. When I say, when I was at the beginning of the show last week, I was like, anybody get any game like suggestions? Because I'm not alone sitting here going, There's games coming out, but I see anything I want to play right now. I'm, yeah, 60%. I'm in the majority of people looking around going, I guess I'll give this another playthrough. Maybe something good will come out next week. Whoever knows. Premium transactions made all the money. Oh, that's cool. Like, that's not a surprise. And let's go back to this cloud gaming. Because something we don't ever think about. Because here we are in our ivory, steamy towers with our data bits flowing pretty good, and we got Xboxes everywhere and multiple PCs just taking up extra space in our house. We don't think about emergent markets, you know, places where like it's not really practical to go out and buy an Xbox or, you know, a new PC, or like mobile phone might even be out of the question for some people. But you know what, I might be able to afford a few quid every month to get some game streams, some GeForce Now. Oh wow.
Assuming these places have good internet.
Ironically, a lot of them do. Yeah.
not all of them, but many.
Not all of them, but like surprising, like that's not fair. Like that's a shit trade off then for good internet. Yeah. and we don't think about that from emerging markets. But yeah, 90% of playtime, just 48 games. Man, everybody's digging around fighting for that 10%.
Yeah.
You know, when your game comes out, you're like, I want a piece of that 10%. Because, yeah, you got the Roblox. I like how they put the Switch over here to its own little fuck-off category. And they're like, yeah, that's six titles from Nintendo. It just prints money. We can't. That doesn't make sense to us.
And then they're even like, which makes Fortnite on the Switch even more impressive because it has to compete with all of those other first-party titles from the Switch.
Right. Yeah, I mean, nothing. Did you see any outside of, like, confirmation bias when I saw that? I'm like, yes. Did you see anything that, like, really caught you, like, off guard? You're like, wait a minute, what?
I guess I was surprised about, like, not really surprised. It was interesting. I had never really thought about it. But the growth trends in, like, the types of games where we're seeing less playtime in, like, things that aren't shooters or action RPGs. Mm. These seem to be like the dominant forces. And, like, if you think about it, it makes sense. But, like, yeah, it's not something I really thought about super hard until someone brought it up. But listen, they're also saying cross media exposure is a great thing. All I'm saying is that these wonks are telling you, Netflix, that it's a really good idea if you make an Into the Breach or a FTL show. Netflix, please, I'm begging you. We need really good sci-fi, and we need it now. Give it to me, please.
From the production company behind Cowboy Bebop.
I'll give it a pity fuck.
All right.
It's not a pre-existing IP, so they might be able to get away with more shit.
FTL
and Into the Breach are very, very story light. So you can do whatever the fuck you want, right?
I mean, dude, you could make like a psychological isolation horror
thing. I want a Lethal Company TV show. I think that would be fucking hilarious.
That'd be fucking dope.
If you did it like a reality TV show, like a fake reality TV show, yeah.
Dude, we're only like a couple of generations from where that's gonna be on a fucking island. That island where they film dangerous shit for reality. That's comedy kids, like. We're getting there.
Who are they going to cast as like the fucking Roach Boss? I want Gary Busey as
hi,
the
as behind this door. Meet Mr. Crisper. That was once a rat. I have done some video game benchmarking type stuff. What am I talking about? Well, a couple of weeks ago, I saw a video and I'm like, oh, look, it's an Intel Arc. It's a little tiny Intel Arc that doesn't require extra power. It's got a 50-watt TDP and I bet it's got AV. Oh, it's got AV1 on it. And I put it up on the Wish Zone and I posted the video on in our Discord. And Earth Deer was like, there. I'm like, well, I guess we're doing a video on that card. All right, fine. Here it is, ladies and gentlemen. I put this up for patrons a couple days ago. Give you a little early look at it. We're talking about AV1 on Linux with a Sparkle. A310 Eco. It kind of had a hard mode on it though, because
mini display port, huh?
Two.
Yeah.
Not one. Two. I tested them and they work. But if you look on the box, they're very proud. They pointed out, there's like, hey man, here's a free short bracket. Not an expensive one. A free one. And this is all you get in the box. That's it. There's no driver CDs. There's no packaging. You get the card and you get that. It's $99. And I'm like, that's cool. Till I got to this part here. Is you got to take off three screws to get the full-size bracket to put that little one on that they're very proud to tell you is completely free. That cover doesn't come off.
You don't pay with money.
No. you pay by stabbing the warranty void sticker to remove the back plate to take off the entire heatsink assembly to get to that damn screw. Can't make that shit up. Like we were sitting, I did that on a Wednesday. We had people in chat like hammering on it, man. Like, have you tried? And like, this is the best solution I could come up with. I hope I'm wrong. I hope somebody's like, God damn it, grandpa, you fucked this up.
There's like a flat screwdriver. You can slide under there to like ratchet it open.
Well, I mean, I heard the bullshit and I was like, well, I could take a drill to this and like, this is like, but it's like this Audi level engineering. Like I have imposter syndrome, like even pushing this video out because I so strongly believe that I'm just overlooking how this is done. Or like, there's no way unless like this was designed as a low profile card as it is. And it was in the box and they were getting ready to do it. And some executives like put a full size bracket on that bitch. Like, but they're like full size bracket. Okay. Yeah, I really want to be wrong about that. However, it allowed me to answer just some basic questions about Intel Arc on Linux, which is another thing. When I was doing that stream, we had some people show up and like, oh yeah, yeah, this is Intel. I'm like, why aren't you writing this shit on the internet? Because if I do a Google search for this shit, it doesn't come up. I decided to do some Google searches myself, actually provide some information. What does it take to get it up and running? I ran it on Debian testing. It's Intel. Long as you got kernel 6.6, Mesa 23 plus, good to go. Get the firmware. I got the instructions where you can get the latest Intel GPU firmware straight out of them gets. Utilities, non-existent. I found one script, which is two scripts that'll give you a little bit of information and a little bit more information, neither of which can control fans. And you're thinking, man, you know, why do you need to worry about fan control on a low profile, single slot blower style cooler? Yeah, that might be a problem. However, there's nothing you can do about it. And at idle, it does this wonderful little thing where it sits there and it goes silent, then it goes zzz. Then it goes quiet again. It goes, wait, I'm getting hot again. Zzz. It's maddening. It will drive you mothering insane. And fortunately, Sparkle's aware of it. They're like, all right. Yeah, okay. Yeah, okay. We're going to do a BIOS update to fix that. And it's incredibly shouty at full tilt. But more importantly, AV1 encoding does work with OBS. So that's kind of what I was thinking about, like being able to get this as an AV1 add-in card with your existing system, because not everybody can run out and buy the latest AMD or the latest NVIDIA cards. And like, hey, you could drop this in, tried it with Blender. Didn't work with Blender, strangely enough. And I know people have gotten it to work with Blender. It just wasn't having it. Tried a couple of different versions. Surprisingly, it worked with DaVinci Resolve. Lost that bet. Then I clicked on a button on the interface and it just froze. Works in Handbrake. So you can definitely do some AV1 encoding. To give you an idea of, like, if you want to do AV1 on the CPU 5600G, it's going to take you about 16 minutes. If you offload that to your Arc A310, you can do it about 3 minutes. A little bit faster. And since this is Linux Gamecast, I was going to do a separate video about this, but I realized, like, the entire time I was running the benchmarks and playing games on this thing, it was like fucking torture porn. And I'm like, I don't want to do a whole other video of torture porn because this is an A310. This is the weakest Arc they make. All I did, there's no 1% lows here. We didn't do multiple resolutions. This is just average frame rate. And like, can you get to the end of it? Well, what we're looking for. Again, it's the 5600G at a blistering 720p low, unless otherwise noted. And Pedro, is this about what you expected, or maybe some more, man?
Yeah, no, that's about in line. It kind of surprised me how well the 5600G did in Cyberpunk.
Cyberpunk, then, okay, let's go ahead and just go straight to that, because that's going to be the first YouTube. I need YouTube comment bingo. Yes,
yeah,
it's like, you
then I remembered, oh yeah, no, CD Projekt Red kind of made a point out of supporting the Steam Deck.
Yeah.
So that probably explains that.
We're talking 39.04. First, we're talking about it finished the Cyberpunk benchmark. Good on you. 39.04 for the 5600G and 31.46, which is the only game out of, we did Cyberpunk, we did Shadow of the Tomb Raider, 720p low. But it did 53 compared to 47 for the 5600G. And of course, Talo Principle, high, because that game's 1,100 years old. Closer than I thought, 137 for the 5600G and 144. So we're seeing like 6 to 8%. Not worth $99 because it'll chase you out.
Although Talos at that resolution, yeah, you're probably bottlenecked more by the CPU than the GPU. Yeah,
it's torture porn, man. This thing was just sitting here screaming. There's a video of it screaming. Go ahead and have fun with it. My verdict for this is they get an interesting bit of kit. They do, for its initial purpose, because the only reason you would buy an A310 is for the AV1 encoding. There's no other reason for that to exist, because it's a 64 gigs on a 64 gig box. You're not doing anything with this. It's technically faster than the integrated graphics in a 5600G.
How much memory was on that box? 8
4 gigs. Oh, that they were both were set to 4.
Okay.
Yeah. And I probably will have to go back and like write all that because people are grabbing them. Like, it's an A310, motherfucker. We're just trying to see if it runs, and no one cares, yeah. Right?
I'm a little sad. I was kind of hoping that it would be a little closer, a little more neck and neck.
I think it did pretty good, but you know, my whole take. You go watch the video interfacinglinux.com, and what I wrote as just like in the closing. Because they got like half a product here, because what I really wanted and I was excited about was an add-in AV1 encoder that is cheap as fuck. $99. Better be like $75. And you can't use this in a desktop. It is just too damn loud. Like, this is not like, it's, if you've ever dealt with a Quadro, imagine that, but shoutier and whinier because it's so small and it's single slot. So if they could take this, just completely get rid of all the video stuff. We don't need video out. Those two mini HDMI, two mini display ports that Jordan loves so much, gone. We're going to axe them. HDMI, gone. Don't need it. We're going to keep nothing but the board. We're going to put up, make it two slot. Doesn't have to be single slot. Make it two slot, passively cooled AV1 add-in card. Because fucking eventually, AV1's going to come out of beta on YouTube, and Twitch is going to realize this clusterfuck that NVIDIA gave them some money to try out with is not going to work, and they're going to roll out AV1. Whoever has an AV1 encoder on the market for like $75, $85, $95, go make some money. Gotta make some money. Now, maybe, because right now, your only market for these cards are media encoding enthusiasts. Which sounds like some AI-generated shit, but it's the nicest way I can...
Jellyfin enthusiasts, I think.
I couldn't really find a polite way, because we all know motherfuckers that, you know, they're great people, but like, what's their hobby? They encode fucking video. Do they watch it? Nope. They just sit around and encode that shit. And that's great. But if you got to use this card, you got to put it in your server in your basement, covered with a blanket. So you would sell more to the people who maybe wanted to put this in their HTPC. And also people like, if you want to do an add-in, because I did test it and it worked with an NVIDIA card, you could have an NVIDIA GPU. So you got a 20 series, 30 series, or if you got, do you have AV1 on your card, Pedro?
No.
No.
6700X. 6700. AV1 decode only.
You got that old.
Great gaming card, and it's great for the gaming, 1440p, but you want to, you know, stream the AV1 to the Twitch or the YouTube, plop that in. Never worry about it. And plus, you can reduce the bus from by 16 if you're only doing the video encoding. There you go, Sparkle. Call me. I want to play with more of your stuff. And go check it out, interfacinglinux.com. Fair warning, there is an Amazon affiliate link, because I know some people desperately try to avoid supporting independent content creators. Like, ah! All right. What do we get? A little bit of hate mail?
Yeah, just
very short this week.
Yeah. Do we want to do the plugs first, or we just want to jump into it?
Sure, you do the, go ahead and do the plugs real quick.
All right, well, if you want to support us and make this all this shit possible, you can head on over to patreon.com/linuxgamecast. You can become a Patreon, get into our Discord channel where we have a bunch of good shit. You can also check out linuxgamecast.com where we have links to all of the episodes that are available. You don't have to just watch them on YouTube or Twitch. You can download them straight from us. On our website, we got the contact page. We have affiliate links for Humble. We have affiliate links for Amazon. We got a store. We got wish lists. If you want to buy us stuff, if you buy us stuff off the wish list, you can send us a little note and we'll have to read it for you. That is how. Buy me some fucking Snickers bar. I'm so hungry.
Only you listen. You can contribute to giving Jordan diabetes.
My insulin levels are fine. I can eat that entire box and I'm great. Ben got that Sparkle off the wish list, right? So if you want to make Ben do more videos, buy him some more shit. Buy him that green motherboard. He really, really wants it. We got the merch. We got the Patreon. If you got that Twitch Prime Plus sub, give us your business bucks. We really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Really do.
Yeah, you don't have to watch commercials, because I'm not the type of asshole who's going to make you watch commercials after you sub.
Yeah.
Or just spread the word.
Come hang out in our Discord. That's where we're at the other 6 days of the week. If you are one of our patrons and are just Twitch, and we got the Trek Manias, we do that Tuesdays and Thursdays. It's all there, baby. We do so much live and uncut versions of this show. It just keeps raining. But if you already are one of the gorgeous people making their production possible, you already know this. You're just sitting back going, as you were, peasant. But thank each and every one of you for allowing us to make it happen. Now, Let's talk about gifts. Speaking of things that show up in the mail.
from Evandro, he says, on episode 601, Pedro says something like, Evandro bought something for me at 1:11:30. And I'm like, it's me? Is there another Evandro? I don't remember gifting anything. Am I drunk? Probably.
Yeah, no, that was my mistake. It was Eshep, not Evandro. Someone else whose name starts with E. But yes, it was Eshep that bought me the latest revision of the chair robes, the purpley ones with the purple highlights. Yes,
Eshep, you're dead to me if you don't write it next Eshep. Week saying you don't remember buying Pedro anything.
Yeah. Well, it's like, what the fuck are you talking about?
No, because I went
about?
Back and I checked.
just gaslight Pedro nonstop.
Yeah, just see how long we can keep going down.
No, I went back and I checked. It's like, okay, so if it wasn't Evandro, who the hell? Oh, it was Eshep. Oh, okay, also starts with E. All right.
It was EA Sports.
Hey, if you got something to say, man, use that contact form. Contact form, yes, content form. Leave
it
a comment
is a content
YouTube.
Form if you think about it.
It is. Speaking of forums, if you got any questions for content creation, multimedia production, hardware, software, anything that's doing the video pixels or the audio not pixels, I got a forum over at interfacinglinux.com and utilize it while you can, because I'm still able to just answer questions there. You know, if you got a question, you want to take the time, you got to sign up. I don't have any cookies. There's no site tracking or anything like that. And give it a post, join in. I'm over there and I will get back to you. And it feels good to solve like real fucking problems, because like the barrier to entry is just high enough that the people that show up are like, hey, man, and they'll work with you. They're not like, meh, thing broke. And even I had a beautiful Windows user try to like vector in with Linux. They're like, so I'm trying to get this FireWire thing working. I'm like, all right, cool, man. Go post. And usually that chases them all. And they come in and like, yeah, okay. So Ubuntu Classic didn't work, but seriously, how do I get this working in Windows 11? I don't know. And they're like, aw, that's fine.
Ubuntu XP.
Yeah, you got to install two Ubuntus.
Yeah, just install Ubuntu Vista.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to do it for tonight. So, it's time to cue the music. You can always find us kicking off, sliding off, moonwalking off. Have either of you ever attempted to moonwalk?
Yes, badly.
Awesome.
Yes, it went very poorly.
If you want to get in touch with me, just Vin Stone on X, Twitter, going to give it to you. I'm on Blue Sky. Just type in Vin. And of course, we have a federated timeline of Mastodonist over at mast.linuxgamecast.com. Hit me up in Discord. I'm in there. I'll chat with you if you got something, you got a question, you got a hint, maybe a thought. Two allegations and a bite-sized bag of salt and vinegar pickle chips.
I am trapped behind the man in the mirror. You can see my reflection at The Burning Fool on Twitter, at Frojo at mass.linuxgamecast.com, and at frojo.bsky.app.
And if you're a Portuguese speaker, I will be doing a bit of a talk about the Steam Deck with someone from the National Association for Free Software. That's in Portugal. So, we'll be doing that on Monday. See how that's gonna go. In the meantime, you can always find me on Mastodon. It's unaccounted for with the actual number 4 at mass.linuxgamecast.com.
So you're intentionally not telling anybody where the fuck to be able to watch that, right?
Public access?
I don't even know yet. So
is it going to be on Mastodon?
All right. That was some credits.
I thought that was that's the new Metallica album, right? Amphibian Arithmetic. I'm like, Death Magnetic? What? Well, we gotta thank our executive producers, Megas and Arthur, and we gotta thank our advisors. Our executive producers are Barbara Amp, Scott Michaud, Atomicast, Mike G, Tomaj, David, Eshep, Ian, Kurducky, and 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And our little Nikki fans are Super Desto, Empty, Eggy, and King Bong. Not King
and
Bong.
And the sea monsters, Renault, Rider X, Machina, Trojiverse, and Justin, Darkwing System, D-Dazzing, Joe, the Kresny, and Ogi.
Hey, we got all these death notes, like Turnover, Back, and Kumi, Zito, Pebble, Piper. I'm gonna get some chillings this week, man, like Jason B, North Ranger. Let's see, who else has been hanging out there? I see him every now and then.
M-Fox Dogs, Fine, Jello, and Piper. Hey.
Aromatic death. Euthanasia, Tempec, all the fine-upstanding cannibals like Carl, Mike, Arthur, Tom. Lennox, New Oldness, Noctilus, Johnny, Shep, Game of Trod, Mito, Adias, and Joe, Aromatic Dev again, and Guy, Jor, Rye. Thank you very much. Till next week.
T-pose to assert dominance.
We are the T-pose. We're the ultimate permanently T-pose like the anteaters. We inside of everyone, there are two anteaters, people. All right?
And they're making out.
Fuck yeah, they are. Dying of fire, everyone. See you next week.
Bye.
Five dudes.